Okay, so yes, it's not the Parsha topic, and nor is it a topic dealing with any upcoming Yontif, but nevertheless, it is apparent you guys saw the video with the Parsha Duma. So this was actually a request. Somebody requested to discuss the person's not here who requested, but nevertheless, someone requested about the Parsha Duma video. So we will address the video. What we'd like to do over the course of the next few minutes is to discuss, is it enough? Okay, so there's a Parsha Duma in Lakewood. Mazel tov. So is that like enough? Is that sufficient? Can we start doing something right now? Is that enough to get excited about? Is there something else we need to be excited about? What does the Parsha Aduma mean practically to us? So yes, it is not necessarily halacha maisa, but it will be halacha maisa why we can't make a Parsha Aduma right now. That's going to be the gist of the shiur. So if we were to have the Parsha Aduma, what's preventing it? So quick overview of the ceremony of the Parsha Aduma. The Parsha Aduma has to be burnt by a Kohen Tahor, a pure Kohen, on a special pyre of wood. This is the only avoda that's not done in the Beis HaMikdash. This is done in Har HaZeisim, looking over into the Beis HaMikdash. And Har HaZeisim is all graves nowadays, so this is clearly going to get in the way of the process, but that's for another time.
And what do you find in Tahor Kohen?
We gotta get there. Okay. So the ashes would be gathered in a special kli with water from a natural spring from the Meshiloach, and then the water with the ashes can be sprinkled on a person who's tahar, amen, and that is the entire ceremony in order to get rid of the tumah for, and this is important, for someone who has come in direct contact with the dead body. That means touching it, being in the same ohel as it, getting avi avos tumah. We're not talking about someone who came in contact with someone who was Tamei Meis. The person, if you touch someone who was Tamei Meis directly from the corpse, so you're only a Rishon L'Tumah. You don't need Parsha Aduma for that. That person is okay. There's ways to get around that. What we care about is that we're assuming that we have been in a hospital, we have been in a funeral home, so that's making pretty much almost all the population going to be Tamei Meis. So the single greatest issue preventing us from driving down to Lakewood and grabbing that cow and turning it into ash is that we need someone to prepare it. And we are lacking someone to prepare it nowadays. A Kohen who is Tahor. Now, the halach is that to prepare the Efer Parsha Aduma, you must be Tahor. Everyone involved in the process needs to be Tahor. That is the rule.
Can we say Tumah Hutra B'Tzibur in this case?
No, we cannot say Tumah Hutra B'Tzibur in this place. It is no go. Because when it comes to preparing the Parsha Aduma, we require the highest level of sanctification. We have no loopholes when it comes to preparing the Parsha Aduma. Actually, Chazal went to great chumras in preparing the Parsha Aduma. The chumras on top of chumras on top of chumras, as we'll see soon. What's the pasuk? The Torah says in Bamidbar Yitzhas Tes that the tahor person needs to gather the ash of the Parsha Aduma. And Chazal learned from here that all the participants in the making of a Parsha Aduma need to be tahor. That is the halacha, except for the shochet. We'll get to the shochet in a second. Even though the pasuk doesn't mention any other participants, still the drush implies everyone involved in the process of making the Parsha Aduma must be tahor. That is the rule. Rashi Yevamos Ayin Gimel Aval says that since this is a korban chatas, the Parsha Aduma is essentially a korban chatas in the way it's prepared, and the avoda must be performed by people who are tahor. As in any korban chatas, the people who perform the avoda need to be pure and not tamei meis. Now, the Mishnah Zvachim on Gimel Amid Aleph says that a tamei is allowed to do shrita for a chatas. Why? Because shrita is not really an avoda. Anyone can do avoda. A non-kohen can do the shrita. The shrita is not considered avoda. The avoda is kabbalah, of accepting the blood, and halicha, and walking the blood, and zrika, and throwing the blood. Those things are going to be avoda. But when it comes to a chatas, when it comes to the Parsha Aduma, so the shrita is not considered an integral part of the preparation of the avoda. And therefore, we don't need that person to be tahor. So that's the one person as a loophole. The shochet for the Parsha Aduma is allowed to be tahor. By the way, we don't burn the animal alive, just so that's clear to everyone. A student asked me that the other day. We don't burn the animal alive. That's a little cruel. So
does the shechita have to be kosher?
Yeah, it has to be a good shechita. It has to be a good shechita for a korban. Yes. So when it comes to the Parsha Aduma, a tameh could do the shechita. In the times of the Beis HaMikdash, this was clearly not a problem because we had ash of the Parah Aduma. So this was not a very big deal. However, what do we do when we don't have the ash of the Parah Aduma? So the Mishnah in Parah, in Gimel Hay, which is not over here, says that the first Parah Aduma was made by Moshe Rabbeinu. And then the second Parah Aduma was made by Ezra HaSofer. The Aruch HaShulchan HaAsid. What's the Aruch HaShulchan HaAsid? The Aruch HaShulchan of Michael Michael Epstein, the famous book on Shulchan Aruch, wrote a Shulchan Aruch on Yemos HaMashiach, and what's going to be on all the halachos are not relevant now. It's the Shulchan Aruch HaAsid, the future Shulchan Aruch. So he writes by Parah Aduma in Siman Nun Zayin Chaf Aleph that it was an open miracle that the ash of a Parah Aduma from Moshe Rabbeinu lasted until Ezra. It's 900 years. An open miracle in the ash of one Parah Aduma. Now, there is a little bit more ash than just the ash of the cow, because anything that's burnt with the Parah Aduma becomes Parah Aduma ash. So you have anything that's thrown in, the wood and all the different accoutrements that come along with the cow are going to be burnt up as well. So you get a little bit more ash for your money in this case. Now, there's a machlokas in that Mishnah between the Chachamim and Rabbi Meir, how many more cows there were during Bayit Shemini. Either there was five or there were seven. Okay? Was there five more cows or was it seven? So nowadays, whatever it is, we'll get to the Rambam who tells us how we passed it in that machlokas later on. But nowadays, we don't have the ash. So without ash, ready to go, so what do you do? So this is a Mishnah in Gimel Beis, right here, the first source on the sheet, on the sheet here. And the Mishnah says as follows. To understand the Mishnah, we just need a little bit more background of Tumantara. There's something called a Kever HaTahom. A Kever HaTahom means that there's an underground lair somewhere underneath the ground in which something Tameh is. A corpse, some sort of human remains are buried underneath the ground, and the Tumah will come up through the ground. Because there's no ohel blocking it. The Tumah will come up through the ground, meaning if there was something buried underneath the shul right here, right underneath where I was standing, I would be Tameh, because the Tumah presses up through the ground. That's called a kever hatahum, the possibility that there's a human grave underneath the ground. The halacha based on the mission Olos in Gimel Zayin, is the mission Yom Yom Olos? No? Caleb? Olos, okay. So in Gimel Zayin, the Mishnah there says that if human remains don't have a tefach of space, so the Tumah keeps on going until there is a tefach of space to stop it. The Ohel does two things. An Ohel creates an area where Tumah can exist for anyone there, but it also blocks Tumah from going up past the Ohel. So if you stand on top of an Ohel that's covering a corpse, you are fine, because the Ohel blocks it. An Ohel is only made when there's a tefach of space. Okay, you need that tefach of space in order to block the Tumah. Therefore, anyone who would walk over such an area where there's no ohel blocking Tumah would become Tumah. Therefore, in order to take care of this, the Mishnah says, Chatseros Hayu B'Yushalayim. They were special courtyards designated in Yerushalayim that were built on bedrock, where we were very, very sure that there's nothing buried in the bedrock, because that's what bedrock is. It's the lowest part of the ground where nothing else is going to be there. And on that place, they would build a little place for someone to live, as we'll get to in a second. And then the Mishnah says, Benuyos Agabe Hasela. And what they did is, V'tachtehem Chalul B'pnei Kever Atahom. And the rabbis established that they would build on that bedrock little archways, like a stage on top of the bedrock, a second level of protection. So you had bedrock, where there was 99% guarantee there was no human remains, and then on top of that they built a stage making an ohel. So for the 1% chance there was human remains there, the ohel would block it just in case. So we have chumrah on top of chumrah on top of chumrah to make an area that's totally pure, where there's no tumas mace. This is what was set up by Chazal. Next, says the Mishnah, Umaviyim nashim uvros. They would bring pregnant women there, obviously a child who's going to be a Kohen, married to a Kohen. They brought pregnant women there to the courtyard to give birth to the child and then raise him there in perfect tahara. V'yoldos sham u'megandos sham es habneihem. And they would be born in this area where there was guaranteed no tumas meis, and they would raise their kids there. It was like a preschool of Kohanim, Betara. It was a beautiful idea. And they would all live in this area. Now, again, we don't have to be concerned about other people being there, because as we said, if you have a Rishon L'tuma touching someone who's Tamei, you can get at it by going to the mikvah. All we care about is someone not coming directly in contact with the corpse. So now we have this beautiful oasis of Tahara for people to stay, right? And additionally, the mother has no problem being there, even if she's Tamei, because we know there's no Tuma inside the womb, right? That's where we have the whole discussion of someone who's pregnant going to the cemetery, you're married to a Kohen, all these different issues. Is the Tumah going to go inside the womb? Is it not going to go inside the womb? All these different sfeikos, but for another shir. Now, since it was unknown whether the Paraduma was going to come around, right? Remember, you had one Paraduma in 900 years. So it was very unclear. Are we going to have a Paraduma tomorrow? Is there one going on right now? So what would happen was these courtyards were always being used. You always needed to have a kid ready to go in case the Paraduma came up. You had to be ready. You can't like decide, oh, Paraduma, let's start the process now. It's going to be too late. The cow's going to be dead by the time the kid is ready to go. So this always had to be going on. And they would raise the child, until the child was about 7 or 8. Because once the child turns 7 or 8, so the child is now able to have a seminal emission. There's a possibility of the child having a seminal emission. And then once he reaches that age, so then he could become Tameh through an emission. And since we don't even want to entertain the possibility to have to do anything to be Matarim, we want him to be perfect. No possibility, even to go to the mikvah. We want him to be pure, perfectly Matara. Once the child would get past 7 or 8, so then he's not helpful anymore, and throw him out, and we move on to the next one. Okay? So what would happen? The child's ready till 7 or 8, and now he would be ready to go. Then the mission, well, before we get to the next part, Tosos and Sukkah, Chaf Aleph and Aleph, says that the child was only used to draw water, but not to make the mei chatzis, not to make the water mixture himself, only to draw the water, which we'll get to in a second, but not to make the mixture, because Tosos holds, you have to be a bar mitzvah to make the water, to mix the water, you have to be a bar mitzvah. The Chazon Ish says the bar mitzvah who's raised in the courtyard was used. That's what the Chazon Ish says, that they had different ages. You had the 7 or 8 year olds, and you had the bar mitzvah boys. So the bar mitzvah boys to make the water, and then the 7 or 8 year olds to go and draw the water. So you have two stages working at the same time. The Rambam in Hilchos Paraduma says that the young children also made the mechatzas, and they also did the sprinkling as well. So whatever age they went to, so you had young kids ready to go. Next, what did they do? Says the Mishnah. Umevian shvarim. They would bring oxen. V'alkabehem delasos. They would take these very big oxen who were so large that the oxen acted as an ohel. They were so big. They were so big that they would protect the child who's sitting on top of it from any tuma as the ox was traveling. And then what would they do? As an extra precaution, v'alkabehem delasos. They put doors, panels, like wood panels, on top of the cow as like a seat, as an extra ohel, in case the cow wasn't good enough to block the tuma, so it had an extra ohel on top of that. So it had a double ohel, and the kid would sit on top of this little contraption with the cow, and then the door on top. A sight to behold. And they would be given cups of stone. Okay? And they would uvekoso shel even, biyadam, and because stone doesn't become tameh, they'd be given cups of stone. Higilu shloch, and they would travel into the Mei Shiloh, the Shiloh River. Yardu maluim, they would go down and they would fill them up. Va'alu v'yashu al-gabayim, and they would come back up with the cups of water. This is a machlokes. Would they get off? Maybe if you got off, then there might be something tummy in the water. Another sheet of the Mishnah says, we don't assume there's anything tummy in the water, and therefore they would get off. If you didn't get off, you used a rope to pull it down and to pull it up. The other shita says that doesn't work. Why do we want you to get it off? Because maybe it's not you have to draw it up with your hand from the water, and therefore there's a machlokas. Do you have to get off? Do you stay on? Whatever. So the kid's on the ox. He gets the water, and then we move on. Now, as a side point, the Tosefta in Para says that nowadays Para Duma ashes that are taken outside of Eretz Yisrael are no good. So this entire event needs to take place in Eretz Yisrael. So the cow in Lakewood is not helping us. We need to get the cow on a plane. And we need to get it to Eretz Yisrael. Because it can't be prepared, because the Gemara in Shabbos, as above, says that Chazal or Gozer on Tumas Amim, and that anything outside of Eretz Yisrael is Tameh. So therefore, having a cow in Lakewood is very nice, but it's certainly unhelpful and no good for us. Okay? Next. Now, based on the above...
Now, what does stomach, can you take it out of business taste?
What? The cow is not Tameh. The cow, I think, the cow being here is not a problem.
Okay.
But once it's burnt, it'll be fine. I'm pretty sure about that. Now, based on this Mishnah, we certainly have a big problem. Because what needs to happen, so we're very happy. There's a red cow in Lakewood, Baruch Hashem. But we need more importantly than a red cow. We have genetics nowadays. We can make 100 red cows if we really put our mind to it. I'm sure it wouldn't be, you know, sure we could do something about it. But what we need is a parcel of land on bedrock in Eretz Yisrael where you can essentially build a school where children can go and be birthed and be raised Batara and Kohanim and be trained and taught how to do the whole ceremony. That is a worthy investment. A red cow? I think we can get another red cow. But if we're really serious about it, we need such a place to raise Kohanim Batara and with their mothers taking care of them. And then again, if you only start it right now, so then by the time you get the whole thing started and you have the land, you have the kids and the mothers give birth, you're going to miss the cow. So the real effort needs to be done in making an area to raise the children who are Kohanim Batara. Okay? Now, there are certain hidurim and milos that come with it, and not everything is ma'akeh, but it's certainly clear, the Rambam says, that much of what we're saying are hidurim, but having the Kohanim Batara certainly is ma'akeh. It must be, it's a pasuk in the Torah, this is rule number one. So that is issue number one. Someone comes to you and says, I saw a video of a paraduma. So your response is, but where are the children? We need the children to get the paraduma ready. So, issue number one is out there. Let's move on to the next issue. The next issue is that the pasuk in Bamidbar Yotes Dalet says that the blood of the Parah Aduma, when you offer the sacrifice, needs to be sprinkled in front of the Ohel Moed. It needs to be in front of the Beis HaMikdash. And this is mentioned here in the Mishnah. The Mishnah says in Parah Gimel Tes, Kaftua Bechevel Shel Magog, Nasnura Agavi Amaracha, Varosha Lidarim Bifnei Amarav, describing how the cow has to stand. The Kohen Omid B'Mizrach, the Kohen stands to the east, upon the Mara, facing the west. This is all happening on Har Zeisim, looking over into the Beis HaMikdash. Shachar B'Yamino comes down with the knife in his right hand, and he catches the blood in his left hand, which is quite acrobatic. Rabbi Yehuda Omer B'Yamino, whom Mekabel, who knows the Smolo, maybe he has to catch it in his right hand as well, after shuffling with his right hand, which is quite a move. Umazah B'Yamino, Tav of Hazah Shev Upam, Keneged, Beis Kodesh HaKadoshim. He needs to sprinkle the blood, Keneged, Beis Kodesh HaKadoshim. It needs to be in front of, facing towards the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Now, it's obviously not really in front of the Kodesh HaKadoshim because he's on Har Zeisim. The Kodesh HaKadoshim is feet away, hundreds of feet away. It needs to be aligned with the Kodesh HaKadoshim, which, as you can imagine, creates an issue because we don't have the Beis HaMikdash, unfortunately. And therefore, we need to discuss how can they fulfill this part of the Korban without a Beis HaMikdash. It seems to be you need a Beis HaMikdash to offer the Parah Aduma. Okay. So, Rashi in Menachos of Zayin and Beis explains that if the sprinkling was not done directly towards the Mikdash, then it's pasul, because the Torah says chukah. This is a chok, which means it's ma'akev. You must have it. You must have the sprinkling towards the Beis HaMikdash. And without a Mikdash, we seem to be lacking a very integral part of the ceremony. So that's what we'll have to see. So does a bad sprinkling ruin the whole Parah Aduma? Let's say we did this. Does that mean the whole thing is shot? So no. The Ravid and the Chazon Yecheskel say no. The Tiferes Yisrael and the Mishnayah says yes. Meaning, let's say I did sprinkle and it was in the wrong direction. There was no Beis HaMikdash and you needed a Beis HaMikdash. Does that mean, oh God, we killed the whole Parah Aduma and now everything's lost? So no, you could technically, I guess, figure out if you could do it the right way and save it. But it doesn't ruin the whole thing. But it certainly is ma'akev if you want the Parah Aduma to be kosher. Now the Chazon Ish in Hilchos Parah Zayin Aleph says that the halacha is as follows. The Gemara Menachos Chafes Amin Aleph says that the sprinkling doesn't exactly have to be where the entrance of the Beis HaMikdash is, as long as he's facing west. Remember, he's standing in Har Zeisim, His back is east, and he is facing west towards the Makom HaMikdash. As says the Chazon Ish, as long as he's facing west, that's sufficient, okay? And the sprinkling is only possible, says the Chazon Ish, if he sprinkles the blood in the wrong direction. But if, as long as he's facing west, that's fine. That's all the Mishnah means. This, says the Chazon Ish, seems to be the opinion of the Rambam in Perek Dalet, Halacha Vav, and the understanding of the Chazon Ish. That is Shita 1. So based on the Chazon Ish, we have a Kula. Even though we don't have the base on Migdash, we could, as long as the person's facing west, then we are good. The Sifri seems to have a different approach. The Sifri on the Pasuk says it's not enough to sprinkle the blood towards the Migdash, but he also has to see the entrance of the Migdash. He has to be able to look down from Harzaisim and see into the base on Migdash through the door. That's the sheet of the Sifri. If that's
which,
the case...
Which door are you talking about?
Into the Heichal of the
Mikdash. The Masach.
Yeah.
There is no door.
Yeah, no, I don't mean like... I mean, okay, the Pesach.
Is it possible to see in?
Yes, the wall on that side of Harabayis, says the Mishnah, was specifically built lower so you could see in for this purpose.
Oh, wow.
They're specifically built in such a way. Okay. So says the Sifri, you need to see through an entrance. If there's no entrance, then what are we talking about? Therefore, so the Chafetz Chaim... We know, wrote the Chavetz Chaim and the Mishnah, but he also was very much a Metzapel Yeshua, one Mashiach to come. He compiled his famous Likutei Halachos on Kadshim and the other Halachos where there was no riff. He made his own riff on the Gemara for Kadshim. So he has a Perish on this called the Zevach Toda. So the Zevach Toda in Zvachan Lamedalam and Aleph, he says that we could potentially offer Korbanos nowadays. It is potentially possible without the Pesach Habayis, without the entrance. Because, he says, we have the Challah, we have the space. He says, you don't need to have the building, you need to have the space of the Kedusha where the Beis HaMikdash was. And therefore, when it comes to the Paraduma, we could say that you could do the sprinkling towards where the Makom HaMikdash was. It's possible to say such a thing according to the Chafetz Chaim. But the Chafetz Chaim does say, the Chafetz Chaim thinks maybe it's not so clear, because he says, the Goyim built a mosque on the Makom HaMikdash. And therefore, maybe since there's a building on the Chalal, that stops the ability to see the place. And he leaves as a Tzarachi, and he says, I'm not sure, maybe we can't bring Korbanos nowadays so quickly. That's his Tzarachi. On the other hand, we have the Briska Rav. The Briska Rav writes in his Chedushim on the Rambam here in Paraduma. He argues with the Chazon Ish. And he says there's a din of Riyah Mamish. You need to see the Beis HaMikdash. It's not enough to see the direction. He thinks the Chazon Ish is wrong. You need to see the Beis HaMikdash into the opening. And he thinks it's Ma'akev and it must be there. And he says the sprinkling has to be there. You need to see the Heichal. So again, we have a three-way Machlokas, whether you can see the Abba Chalal, whether you don't need to see anything at all. You just need to be wet, so you need to actually see it. So this would have to be decided by, Gedolei HaPoskim, in order to figure out, do we need the Beis HaMikdash? Do we not need the Beis HaMikdash? Is the mosque in the way? Is it not in the way? Another stumbling block on the way to preparing a paraduma. Again, to review, we have two issues so far. One is that we have no kohanim to prepare it, and two is we might need the Beis HaMikdash built in order to do it. Okay? Next. The third issue is a comment of the Rambam at the end of the third parak of Hilchos Paraduma. Let's see what he says. V'teisha paros adumos nasu. There have been 9 paradumas in the history of Jewish people. Clearly he's passing like the Shita that says there were 7 after Ezra.
7
during Bayashin, right? There was Moshe, Ezra. Yeah, Moshe, Ezra. Moshe carried us through Bayis Rishon.
Right, I'm saying, so there was one the entire time.
Yes,
correct. That's all you needed it.
Yeah.
Whereas the Bayis Shani already, you had Sadarish, you needed 7.
Exactly. So you had Ezra, and then you had 7 more afterwards. So says the Rambam, Shemishnitztavu b'mitzvah zu ad shecharav ha-Bayis Rishon, until the second Bayis HaMikdash was destroyed. Rishon asa Moshe Rabbeinu, Vishniya asa Ezra, v'sheva ben Ezra ad chorban ha-Bayis. And then the Rambam writes something fascinating. Vasiris osa hamelach hamashiach mehera yigala. The Rambam does something extremely uncharacteristic, in which he gives us a little tefillah. This is very odd for the Rambam to do. We know that the Rambam is, this is not in his style, and he gives a little tefillah. Now there are different girsos. This is the girsa in the Frankel Rambam. In the other editions of the Rambam, it says Vasiris yase hamelach hamashiach mehera yigala amen ken yirasam. There's a little bit more of a tefillah. But it's the same idea. I'll bring this seems to be the best text, so this is the one we brought. Now, This would imply, what do we need to bring in the next part of Duma? We need Mashiach. We need Mashiach. That's what the Rambam says. We need Mashiach. In order to do this. So maybe you'd say, maybe the Rambam learns like the Brisker Rav, who says you need a binyan beis hamikdash. That's what the Rambam's saying, right? Why is he saying, again, what's the halacha the Rambam is teaching us in this little tefillah? It's not for waste, this tefillah. What's he coming to teach us? So maybe he follows the Brisker Rav. The Brisker Rav says that you need a beis hamikdash. What he's saying is, when the beis hamikdash is built, b'mehiri amenu amen, so then we'll have the 10th one. That's what the Rambam is hinting to. Perhaps that's one way to explain it. However, the Rambam does say in Hilchos Beis Bechira, Parak Beis, famously, that we can offer korbanos nowadays. So the Rambam doesn't really require the beis hamikdash to offer korbanos. So I don't know. That maybe he doesn't hold like the Brisker Rav. You have to ask the Brisker Rav. The Lubavitcher Rebbe in a Sicha, in Likutei Sichos, in Chaf Ches and Parshas Chukas, notes this comment of the Rambam, and Lubavitcher Rebbe was one who was very sensitive to careful readings of the Rambam, and he says that the Rambam is telling us that the Parah Aduma certainly cannot be made until Mashiach comes. Pasuk is Lubavitcher Rebbe, no Parah Aduma until Mashiach comes. In fact, the Rebbe noted this is the only place in the Mishnah Torah where the Rambam offers its tefillah in the middle of the halacha. It's the only place he could recall. And he says, the Rambam was so upset that there was no binyan beis hamikdash, he simply could not contain himself. And he had to write down its tefillah. And he goes on to say that the halacha demands the presence of Mashiach, because one of the mitzvos of the Afer of Parah Aduma is it needs to be Meshumar, it needs to be guarded. There's a mitzvah to guard the ashes of the Parah Aduma and to have a continual guarding. And therefore, what the Rambam is saying is, we can't fulfill this mitzvah because we need Mashiach and we need to have the Parah Aduma in order to fulfill this mitzvah in which we are lacking. That's the approach of
the Rebbe. On the Lashon of Amelech HaMashiach.
So we have three issues to review again. We have no Kohanim, we lack a Makam HaMikdash, and perhaps according to the Rambam we lack Mashiach. Again, the point being, it's very nice that we have a Parah Aduma, but there are bigger issues at hand. Next, we're now going to cover a bunch of small issues. These are issues that are things that you could get around if you wanted to. But these are small issues that I want to raise, that just kind of get in the way. Okay? The first thing is a comment to the Or Sameach. The Or Sameach writes in Hilchos Tumas Saras Yud Aleph Vav, that we lack, just like we lack the Mesorah, he says, to know what Tcheles is, and therefore we lack Tcheles, he says we lack the Mesorah of what is Shni Tolas, the red crimson thread. That color, says the Or Sameach, we lack that Mesorah when it comes to Tsaras, and therefore the Or Sameach would imply one of the things you need for the burning of the Parah Aduma is a crimson thread, or Shni Tolas. And therefore, the Or Sameach would tell us, until we know what Shni Tolas is, then that's something that gets in the way of offering the Parah Aduma, that has to be burnt with it as well. That's small issue number one. Small issue number two is the Tosefta in Sanhedrin. The Tosefta in Sanhedrin says, here in Perek Gimel, Ein Sorfen Es HaParah, and then the Tosefta goes on to give a laundry list of things that you need. Ella v'beisin shal shivim v'echad. There are certain things you require a Sanhedrin of 71 for to do. And the Tosefta seems to say clearly that you need to have a Sanhedrin of 71 in order to burn the Parah Aduma. We lack such a Sanhedrin, regardless of what is said in Eretz Yisrael about some Sanhedrin they started, but we certainly lack a real Sanhedrin. Now, the Keren Ora in Sotah Dav Zayin Amud Beis, and the Chas Tei Devon, so I have to point out that the Rambam seems to forget this halacha in Hilchos Parah Aduma. He leaves this out. He doesn't bring this. So that would be one kula. Perhaps you could say that the Rambam in Hilchos Sanhedrin, Hey Aleph, understands that whenever the Sanhedrin is told to oversee something, it doesn't mean the Sanhedrin needs to be there watching you over your back. It just means that this is Sarche HaTzibor, this is a communal need, and we need the Sanhedrin to make sure things are going. But the Sanhedrin is not Ma'akev. You don't need the Sanhedrin to do this mitzvah. It's just something that the Sanhedrin is in charge of to make sure it gets done. Okay, so perhaps issue number two. There's another issue. The Ramban in the beginning of Parshas Chukas says that there's a machlokas tanaim, whether you need a Kohen Gadol to do the burning of the Parah Aduma. And the Ramban paskins, you need a Kohen Gadol. You need a Kohen Gadol, which we lack as well. Okay? So we lack a Kohen Gadol. It could be that you also need the Chazon Ish, right?
To do the what? A Kohen Gadol would need to
do what? To do the Avodah.
So not just the Kohen Tohar, you need a Kohen Gadol.
You need a Kohen Gadol. Uh-huh. How does you get a Kohen Gadol if you don't have any Eishar Parah? I don't know. Something to think about as you go to bed tonight. Okay? So another issue as well. What? Start getting the kids now. I'm not a Kohen. It's not my... The Chazon Ish writes in Cheskes in Hilchos Parah, he says you need the Begadim as well. You can't be Mechusar Begadim. You need to have the Begadim of the Kohen Gadol as well. Another thing to throw into the mix. You have it? Okay, so they were made. You can go to the Temple Institute and you get them over there. Okay, the next issue is as follows. There is a sefer called Hilchos Eretz Yisrael that is miyuchas to the Baal Turim. Okay? We have a copy of it right here. It says the sefer Hilchos Eretz Yisrael. Le'inyan korban u'bizman hazeh. Im haya makam habayis b'shusenu v'haya lanu mi shiyed al makam mizbech. If we had the makam habayis and we knew where the mizbech was, haya efshar shenucha lahakrav korbanos. We could bring korbanos nowadays. V'gam hayinu esrichim le'navi shivar lanu kohen. We need a navi to tell us who's a kohen. Hayinu somchen al chazaka. Or we could perhaps rely on someone has a chazaka, they're a kohen. V'hayinu esrichim lahavi nashim u'baros. We would need to bring pregnant women shiyaldu b'makam shamor in a garden area. And they would give birth. And they would raise the children and they would make a paraduma. So what does the Baal term say? We can make a paraduma nowadays. He has no other issues. Hilchos Eretz Yisrael says that we can make a paraduma nowadays. So we have, I guess, perhaps a Rishon. If he did write this, we do have a Rishon that says we can make the Afer of the paraduma nowadays. Now, the editor of this edition of the Hilchos Eretz Yisrael, I did not bring it for you, but if you look in the back of this edition, the editor on the Hilchos Eretz Yisrael raises a number of questions. He says, first of all, the Mishnah in Shkalim Perek Dalet says that the Parah Aduma has to be paid for from the Lishka, from the treasury of the Beis HaMikdash, in order to buy it. And the Mishnah in the end of Shkalim says there's no Lishka, there's no treasury, unless there is a Beis HaMikdash. So, there's no Beis HaMikdash, there's no treasury, therefore, there's no way to have a paraduma if we can't pay for it properly. That's issue number one. Another issue is that according to the Rambam, the Kedusha of Yerushalayim is not batal, right? The Rambam says you can offer korbanos nowadays. Yerushalayim has the proper Kedusha, but the Rambam does admit that the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael is lacking. And that raises an issue, because where is the paraduma offered? Not in Yerushalayim. The paraduma is offered on Har Zeisim, says the editor. And therefore, since Har Zeisim is lacking in Kedusha, how are you going to do the Avodah for the Paraduma there? A good question. It could be, perhaps, you don't need Kedushas Eretz Yisrael to offer the Paraduma. It could be. But also, another issue thrown into the discussion. Okay? Next issue. In the Beis HaMikdash, only a Kohen Miyuchas is allowed to do the Avodah. You need to have a Kohen who can trace himself back to Aaron HaKohen. Now, nowadays, what does a Kohen Miyuchas mean? He has to have Edim, testament of this person served in the Beis HaMikdash. Now, the Rambam Hilchos Nisuri B'Yachav writes that today all of our Kohanim are Kohen Chazaka. It's a Chazaka. We assume that they're Kohanim, and they're not really authentic because they lack a certain family tradition. Okay, and there's a whole discussion regarding what needs to be done with them and how we get such a family tradition. I think the Rappaport family of Kohanim are known to be good quality Kohanim. I don't know if that makes them a Kohen Miyuchas, but they're known to be better quality than the rest of them. They tell some story, I think, with Vilna Gaon. Whenever he used to meet somebody from the Rappaport family, he used to do a pigeon on Ben, like every single time, because he wanted to make sure. I don't know if the story is true, but there's something to be said about the Rappaport family. So, now...
To the cones, okay.
What?
The cones, though.
The cones are not so good. So, so there's a question. Kohane Chazaka are fine regarding Birchas Kohanim and Pidgin Aben, and you can't marry, right? They're not allowed to marry, people are not allowed to marry, forbidden marriages, that's fine. But to serve in the Beis HaMikdash, you need to be a Kohen Miyuchas. You simply need to be a Kohen Miyuchas. This seems to be the understanding of the Rambam Hilchos Melachim. At the end, by Hilchos Mashiach, he says that Elionavi is going to come and tell us that this is a Kohen Miyuchas, so he can serve in the Beis HaMikdash. This is what the Rambam says. However, Bekitzer, the Drishat Zion, who was a Talmud of Rabbi Kiva Eger, so he wanted to rebuild go back and offer Karbanos, and he wrote letters to all the Rabbanim in Europe, he famously wrote to Rabbi Yaakov Ettlinger, and Rabbi Yaakov Ettlinger wrote two tshuvos responding that this is not feasible nowadays. That's where Rabbi Yaakov Ettlinger titled his Sfarim, the Binyan Tzion, the rebuilding of Tzion, because the first two tshuvos are about Binyan Tzion, rebuilding Tzion, in response to the Drisha Tzion. So some people knocked him down. The Rabbi Akiva Eger, Yaakov Ettlinger knocked him down. Maybe the Chassam Sofer agrees with him. So again, just in general, can we offer Kavanos nowadays? It could be tied into this issue of having Kohanim. Do we have a Yichus? Do we not have a Yichus? So even having little pure Kohanim, it might not be enough. They need to have a good Yichus as well. There is a Sefer called the Taras HaKodesh. The Taras HaKodesh was a Sefer written a bunch of years ago discussing the possibility of offering the Paraduma. He brings a bunch of different options and questions and Sfeikos, and he discusses a lot of things that I did touch upon, things I didn't touch upon, Ayin Sham. Just end with a little bit of Hashkafa. So David Cohen of Brooklyn, so he writes in his Birchas Dagbet Tzchelet Beis on page Reish Dalet. Why did the Rambam tell us about this 10th Paraduma? So he says 10 represents a change of a new era. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, the Eser Mamaros, with 10 statements, right? Hashem then brought Eser Makos on Mitzrayim, a new stage to the Jewish people. And then there was Aseres Adibros, we were transformed into Am Yisrael, a new stage. 10 means you move on to a new stage. And therefore the Rambam is saying, we need a 10th Para Aduma. So the 10th Para Aduma is going to usher in Yimos Mashiach. It would be nice if this Para Aduma in Lakewood was it, but as we saw, there are a number of things in the way. The Yushami Megillah in Perek Gimel Halacha Hey says that Nisan Nigalu uVenisan Asid Degal. This will be a time of redemption. We're still in Nisan. That's why we read about Paraduma right before Nisan. Perhaps this Paraduma in Lakewood should be a Siman Tova of Mashiach coming. Amen.
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 You know. I'm